We're learning Shmuel Beis. We are on Perek Yud Ches, 18th chapter. We are in the middle of the Perek. We are actually up to Pasuk Tes. Let's see Pasuk Tes one more time. We're in the middle of discussing this battle between David and his son, Avshalom. David, although at first we mentioned the beginning sentences of this parak, wanted to fight in the battle himself. He was advised that that would not have been a good strategy for different reasons. First of all, if he would die, then it would have been disastrous. If a bunch of other people died, it wouldn't have been as significant. Also, as we mentioned, this would give David, according to some, the opportunity to take a step back and to be able to really analyze the battlefield, assuming that, in fact, the battle took place nearby where he was, which, according to the map on the back, doesn't really indicate that. But nonetheless, he certainly would be better off not in the middle of the battle. So we mentioned that David's army was winning, and which means, unfortunately, Avshalom was losing. Pasuk Tes, Vayikare Avshalom Lifnei Avdei David. We did see this pasuk, but we didn't see it in its entirety. Hence, I left you hanging last time we were doing this apropos for Haman and his children. Okay. Anyway, so Avshalom happened to Vayikare, happened to encounter, he happened to be before the servants of David, which I guess it's nice to start off that word, which happens to be the name of our parsha, Vayikra, which is the same root of when it came to Moshe. The Baal HaTorah says that you notice that the letter in the Vayikra, the of Aleph, is very, very small. And the reason for that, that the Baal HaTorah says, is because he was an Av. The difference between Vayikar and Vayikra was it something in which was determined, was already predestined, was planned, or it just happened to be this way. So Moshe, who was a big tzaddik, wouldn't want Vayikra, which means that Hashem and Moshe are kind of like always together. So that's why it was written in the small Aleph. Vayikar is like by Bilam, which is just happened to be. It was not the same level. But we know that Hashem is always involved in every step of the way. So, and it says over here, Vayikare Avshalom Lifnei Av David, certainly it wasn't just coincidental. In fact, we're going to see everything that happens, including the way that Avshalom is killed, everything is for a specific reason based on that which he did wrong in his past. Avshalom Rochim Al HaPered. So the pasuk says that he was riding on his little animal, on his mule. V'yavo HaPered Tachas Sovech Ha'ila. So this mule was going underneath the sovech. Mr. Steven says this is Indian anaf, type of a branch of this ela, ela gadola, this big tree. So why do we need to know about all this business? We know that it was in the wood of Ephraim, so it's obviously a lot of trees. So we don't really care about that, but we care what happens because of all these dangling branches all over the place. Vayechazak rosho ba'ela. That unfortunately for Avshalom, his head got entangled among the branches of this tree. Yutan ben Hashemayim ben Aretz, and there he was between the heavens and the earth. Vapered Asher Tachtav Avar. The mule knew better and said, "I'm out of here." He just kept going. So as the mule kept going and he got stuck in the tree, so you can imagine, you can envision him dangling from this tree by his rosh, by his head. But we know that that's not right. It wasn't his head, really. It was his hair. So if we look in the Radak tells us, which is Pasuk Tes, the third line from the bottom, that the Gemara in Sota tells us, Yomar Rizal, that our rabbis teach us, Lafi shinis goya b'saro nitla b'saro, because he was haughty due to his physical appearance, that he had nice, long, flowing, beautiful hair, and that was something which caused him to be haughty. So therefore, he was hung by his hair. Which means it wasn't just, okay, fine, so I'm haughty because of my appearance. Obviously, what the Gemara is telling us, is that was what really was the start of his downfall. That when a person has gaiva, it's a negative trait, but it's not just the negative trait, it's everything that comes from that negative trait. And perhaps because he was a Baal Gaiva, someone who's a Baal Gaiva does not look up to people. He doesn't think that people are better than they are. And I'm better than everyone. Who are you? I'm better than you. And therefore you can kind of understand, what did he do? He rebelled against his very own father, the king. What chutzpah and brazenness could a person have but to do such a thing, your own father? So it was because of his physical appearance, which caused him to develop this negative trait of being a Baal Gaiva, being haughty and brazen, that in turn caused his downfall. And therefore it's appropriate that Nitla Basaro, that's how he should die. Because that's really what caused it, the whole problem to begin with. So it's appropriate, because of that negative trait that he had, that which started all this, that's how it should end as well. And it's also an opportunity, as we're going to see in the Rashi, that it's an opportunity for him to do tshuva. He can do tshuva. And sometimes the greatness of some of the things that happen to us, even though it may be on the surface a tragedy, but it's an opportunity for us to really self-reflect and look at ourselves. For example, when it comes to a person who has saras, a person who has leprosy, right? So it's because a person spoke Lashon Hara. So you can say, well, thank God we don't have that anymore, else there'd be a lot of albinos walking around, right? But the truth is, it's a very nice thing, because otherwise you don't realize what you're doing. Hashem's giving you the sign that's saying, you know what? You're doing something wrong. Maybe you should improve your ways. And that's how these punishments come about. And therefore, perhaps this is the reason why he was punished in this very strange way, so that Avshalom, as he's dangling between the Shemayim and the Aretz, between the heavens and the earth, that he should be able to say, you know what? I was wrong. I made a mistake. And I better do tshuva now, my last moments on earth, for me to have the opportunity to do so.
He's writing a period, he's not writing a chamo, and he's half period. It's a period.
Hey, how you deal with
this? That's right.
So who, but it's, what period was it? It's that mean half period? Which one?
Yeah. I think that's important.
Why wasn't it sus? That would be
That's even worse than a period. That a king is not supposed to have a lot of susim. What is he? I assume that if he was riding a chamor, he wouldn't be as high as he was when riding a peret. Maybe he wouldn't have been
a king is not supposed to ride.
No, he's not supposed to have too many horses. That doesn't mean he can't ride a horse. He's allowed.
Right.
No, but
especially when he's in middle of war. What's he doing? This little Yugo,
Really, right?
Yeah, that little
Yugo nowhere.
The peret is also pride. It's a more important
than a chamor.
Yes.
But less important than a sus.
It's a mule.
Right. Yeah.
Chamor is
a donkey.
There's a donkey.
Chamor is a donkey.
It's a mule. A mule is high. It's bigger. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Because it's a cross between a horse thing and a donkey.
It has to do with
a
haughty.
That's what they
It is strange, like, why you would think that would be your...
I think that should be important.
The ha? Both places it says ha pered,
It certainly represents there's something distinguished and unique about it.
I don't think it's better than a horse.
No, I personally would rather ride
a horse.
And in fact, there's a...
If the trees are low, going on with a horse...
So that might be a smart...
Stupid.
Right, so maybe that could be a good answer to that question.
But it's a donkey.
It's a mule in there.
Right, so I'm saying, but that's a good answer, because he was in a forest where there's all these branches, so he...
Should have been on a
because if it was a horse, maybe he'd be so high up, it would have been harder for him to ride.
With
all the branches all over the place, in the middle of the forest, the wood of Ephraim, because it's so difficult is it to understand that actually in the Septuagint, which is actually a Gemara in Megillah, that talks about when King Talmai asked the sages to be locked in different rooms, and they didn't know the nature of what they were being summoned for, so they were told to translate the language, right? And the miracle, as the Gemara says, is that they all wrote the same thing, even though they changed certain things. There were certain things that are in the actual Torah, the text, that they felt would have been misunderstood, misconstrued, or whatever. So the Gemara goes to a whole list of different things that every one of them, even though they didn't like couldn't text message each other like what they should change or something, they were able to change it. Like the most famous,
they all changed it the same way.
They all changed it the exact same way, even though they were all sensitive to the same potential issues. So the most famous one was King Talmai's wife. Her name was Arneveth. That was her name, which is a name of one of the non-kosher animals, right? A rabbit, right? And he would have been offended. Well, how could you speak this way about my wife? But another thing that is mentioned is that it says when Moshe was traveling in Mitzrayim, redeeming the Jewish people, whatever, it says that he was riding a donkey. And they changed it to a Noise B'nei Adam, which is like a horse. Because they said, how is it possible that a person is dignified as Moshe, redeeming an entire nation? Correct, but Talmai Nov didn't understand that. But the point I'm trying to show is that why would he be riding a mule? You would think if he's actually a king, not only is he a king, but he has to show off that he's a king. You know, it's not like, I've been a king for 40 years already, so I can ride a subcompact car. No one's going to care. But he has to impress everyone because, you know, so it's certainly worthwhile.
Was he by himself, Avshalom, or were there others with him?
Well, he certainly, probably what happened, just based on the reading, is that they were all together, but as they were dying, there was a Magefa Gadol, as it says. People were, not only that, but also they said that the Pasuk told us, which was difficult to understand what it means in Pasuk Ches. It says, "V'yerav hayar le'echol ba'am." It says that the forest consumed them. And we said, was it animals? Or is it just means that they were just completely lost and they were kind of like stuck in the middle of nowhere? They have no idea how to go anywhere. And perhaps that's what happened. So he was with a group, and as they were losing, they all separated, and here he was basically all alone, just running for his life, or riding for his life. So we look at Rashi now. Rashi asked the question, what's the big deal? So he loves his hair so much. Doesn't he cut it? He can, you know, take a knife. He probably had a sword. He must have had something to be able to, you know, give a little something. Yeah. So Rashi says like this. Rashi, also quoting Gemara and Sota, the last on page 322, it says, Amar Abusenu, Shlav Cherbo Lukitz Arov Ru'ah Gehenem Psucha Tachtav. So what did he do? Yeah, of course. He took out his cherev, his sword. And his intention was to cut his hair so that he would no longer be stuck to this tree. Because after all, think about how high up is he, as we mentioned, right? He can't be hundreds of feet up. There was no, what exactly was the problem? So he would just cut off his hair and then drop maybe a foot or a few feet to the ground and then run. But Rashi says, quoting the Gemara, that Rog Gehenim Psucha Tachtav. He saw that the Gehenim, that hell itself was opened up underneath him. So he realized, you know what? What am I supposed to do? So, and in fact, they derive from here the expression that mutav li lehitlos sargoshi, it's better that I should be dangling than hanging by the hairs of my head, v'lerid be'esh, than for me to fall into the fires and the pit of Gehenna. Lefikach hayatoli ba'ila. That's the reason why he remained dangling on these branches. And that's what exactly he said. It says Shav Shalom Ra Behaven. He understood. Shem Yivrach, if he runs away, what does it mean? Is there really Gehenna down there? What was that? It's kind of strange. Like some miracle, like the very opening of the world open to swallow him up. It's kind of strange, because we're going to see that when he's killed, he doesn't fall into some pits. He's going to be buried, as we'll see in a couple of psukim from now. But he understood, what does it mean that he saw Gehenna was opened up underneath him? It means that he finally had the insight of his mistakes. And he realized, Sheim Yivrach, that if I cut my hair and I run, because I can run away, this is my chance, I could be spared. Lo yeh lo chelek olam haba. I know that I will lose my chance to earn the portion of the world to come. Begehenim tiyeh psucha lefanav. And Gehenim is open to me. L'chach bochu l'kabel atzmo din shemayim. And therefore he was willing at that moment to accept upon himself the judgment from heaven. Ulai tiyeh lo kapara. Alidei kach kapara. B'yizkil v'olam havi. He said, ulai, not for sure, but perhaps this one action, this change, as I mentioned a year ago, the tipping point, this was his tipping point, right? That he could decide just to cut himself and run free, but then that's it. No Olam Haba. Or he could receive a kapar right now, if he does true.
He's clearly advanced a little in the way. You know certainly what his punishment is. There's no, there are not two ways about it.
At this moment, he realizes that, yeah.
He realizes this before.
But that's, absolutely. And that's the connection, again, what we spoke about on Shabbos Shuvah some time ago, that's the same thing when it came to Korach's children. So we asked the question, the most unusual thing, right before Rosh Hashanah, you're blowing the shofar, such an important mitzvah, an opportunity to do tshuva, and we're reading seven times this thing about L'Natzeach Livnei Korach Mizmor. Well, why are we talking about Korach's kids? And the answer is that when the ground was to swallow up Korach, it said that the B'nai Korach Lomesu, they didn't die because they did tshuva. They said, Moshe Emeser Sarasa Emes. And perhaps, this is what Mishnah Mitzvot Zahav says, not that little piece, but he says that maybe what it means, that says that they saw the Gehenna Psuch L'Tachta, that he saw that he was going to be swallowed up, it means that this was his last moment to do tshuva, and he did.
I think what he was doing was something kind for his father. The law of Ben Sorel Noe is that his father is supposed to kill him.
He takes him to Beis Din.
Father and to kill his sons.
He saved him.
That horror of
doing it himself.
Right. Correct. I mean, that's the law is that the parents, both the mother and the father, have to be on the same page, and they bring them to the Beis Din, and then if he still doesn't
but if
change.
If the father is the king, then he has to set an example.
Right.
Especially if he's supposed to be a from man, then he has to do it.
No, it's for sure. It's for sure.
How many parents actually did that?
The Gemara says it never happened, and it never will happen.
Right.
Okay. It never happened, never will happen.
It didn't happen. Kill the
son.
There's so many loopholes in that discussion. There's an entire chapter discussing all the loopholes.
It's like there weren't too many murders, too many killings in the Beit Din.
Right, one in 70 years is considered.
It's a bad Beit Din.
Right.
Yeah, that he accepted the punishment.
The idea certainly of a Ben Sar Mora, he is. I mean, within the halakhic framework of a wayward rebellious child, he's not, because that's between 13 and 13 and 3 months, and he's eating meat, and we don't see him doing those things, but his rebelliousness. Right. Right, so maturity level is in that category.
That's what his father says.
Right. That's right. And that's why he said, don't harm him, though, which is interesting.
That's right.
The father said, don't harm my son. And the son says, harm me.
If you think about it, the punishment is really on the lid.
The
lid has to live with this.
Right.
Then, what the Navi told him, and he's seeing it all unfolding.
Right.
And to know that his son is hanging, that's how he died. He can't say, well, at least he died fast.
Right. You can imagine the fear that he had to undergo during all this time, because he's not killed right away, as we're now going to continue and see in Pasuk Yud. V'yar ish echad, so someone obviously saw what was going on. V'yagid liyoav, and they decided, instead of drawing his own sword and killing him Avshomer on the spot, decided to go to Yoav, who was one of the three generals, as we remember that they were split into three. You can see that on the map as well. V'yomer hine, Re'isi es Avshalom tuli bo'ilu. So, guess what? I have some interesting news. I saw Avshalom And he's completely vulnerable, and he's just hanging by a tree. And, you know, that's basically all I have to say about that. But Yomer Yoav, so Yoav said, why are you giving me this information? Why are you speaking? Don't you think maybe actions could be a little bit better? So Yoav said l'ish to this guy, Hamagid, the Lord who spoke to him, v'ini re'isa, you saw him, madu lo hikiso shamartza. Why didn't you hit him down to the ground, like a pinata? V'olai losisacha sar kesev v'chagor echos. And if you feel that, you know, you don't want to take upon yourself that, sorry, you would get tremendous reward. I mean, this is an important person that you're killing. We'll give you a sar kesef, we'll give you 10 silver pieces, and chagor echos, one belt. You look in English, it's like a belt.
It's like a black belt.
Yeah, it's like, well, right, what does that mean? So he brings down, the belt was probably of military decoration, like a medal or sash that denotes heroism. So you'll be considered a hero, you'll get a purple
stripes,
whatever thing. Yes, right. So why are you telling me this? What is the purpose? Obviously, there's probably more significance as to why the number 10 is certainly worth thinking about. Anyway, so, but this was the question. Why didn't you just do it yourself? The Yomar Isha Yov says, you want to know why? He'll give you a good reason. V'lu anochi shoykel al kapai elef kesef. You want to give me 10 bucks? Even if you give me 1,000 into my palms or my hands? Well, eshlach yodi. I would not stretch my hand upon him. El ben hamelech. Doesn't call him Avshalom. Calls him ben hamelech. The king's son. Because after all, Kibyaz Nenu Tziba Hamelech Uscha, yes, Avishai, yes, Itai, Lemur. I know what David, I shouldn't call him that. I know what the king said to you and to Avishai and to Itai. He said, Shimru mi banar bav shalom. As Rashi translates, Kol mi sheyavol yado yishmerenu. David gave specific instructions that any person that comes across my beloved child, okay, he rebelled, but he's still my child, and I'll always have compassion because he is my son. Kerachim av albanim. That's what we say about God. Hashem is avinu. We ask Hashem that he should act to us as a parent-child relationship. That no matter what we do, Hashem will always look favorably upon us. So too David. David said, don't harm my child. What do you mean? Oh, you should have given him, kill him. And you have received some type of a medal, right? I get some stripes, as you say, on my jacket. Crazy? The king himself said, don't harm my son. So why would I go against the words of the king? So, maybe, so what? So I'll do it anyway. So Pasuk Gimel says, oh, Asisi Benafshi Sheker. If I would have done in my soul that which is a lie, or have acted deceitful, the Choldavar Lo Yikached Min HaMelech, what you think? That me doing this, even though I was in the middle of a forest, and people are running, not paying any attention, do you think that the king is not going to find out about this? There's nothing which is ever hidden from the king. The king knows all. He has spies. And anyone who followed, there would be someone who would have seen me. And you would be standing opposite me. So what does that mean? So the Radak says, O Asisi Benafsho Sheker. Benafsho Ksiv. Perish Benafsho Shel Hashom. He said, first of all, there's different interpretations of what this means. That if I would have done this lie to the soul, which means, so one interpretation is to take the soul of Avshalom, to kill him. Says the Radak, Im Ha'ise Harig Oso. If I would have killed him, Sheker Ha'ise Oise Batzma. I would have done something terrible, something wrong. Ki Amel Tzivolav. The king said not to do it. Vakri, however, the way that the word is written is not the way the word is actually read, because vakri hu benafshi, the way that it's actually read is my soul. I would have lied. Kolmer, if you lo yoda hadavar, even if it would not have been known, ha'isosa shekab atzmi, I would have been lying to myself. Kani yodea ki hamel tziva lav. It's like when I was a teacher, I used to always say, you're cheating on a test. You're cheating yourself. They do it anyway. But nonetheless, you think it works. But that's the idea. You said, like, I couldn't live with myself. It's one thing I can get in tremendous trouble for it. But even if no one ever finds out, I know it's wrong because the king gave me orders and I'm so loyal to the king that I would never do something like this. If you continue the next part of the next Radak, it says, V'atot etzavim menegen, says the Radak, Sho toshieni miyad hamelech. When it push comes to shove, yes, I know that you, Yoav, you're such a great person, and you probably would say right now that you would give me medals and a beautiful belt, whatever that is. But you know what? If the king would say, you know what, this guy, how could he have done such a thing, committed such a treachery, rebelled against me, killing my son, you think you would have you'd stand up against him? You're not going to do anything. You're not going to be here to protect me. I'll be left all by myself, and I'll be dead. Why do I want to put myself in such a risk? What is the potential gain? Great, a nice belt, some coins. What's the loss? A lot more. So you know what? I appreciate it, but I am not touching this kid. I'm not doing anything to him. And this is basically what the Mesudas David says over here. He says, O Asisi, Ratz Eloyma is to say, V'ach im ha'isa ma'alim hadavar, if this happens to be that no one will find out about this, which is the way that the Radak reads the reading of the word, that I would be lying to myself, because I'd be rebelling against the king. To me, it would be such like a tremendous sin and a tremendous treachery that I've committed against the king. If I'm not doing it, I can't do it. So that's how he. It doesn't mention who this person is, but that's the way the loyalty of David's servants were. Continuing in the next pasuk, pasuk Yudalit. Pasuk Yudalit says, V'yomer Yoav, lo kein ochil lefanecha. So Yoav says, ochil is translated in Mesudas Siyun as avakesh, to request. Lo kein ochil lefanecha. No more am I going to be requesting anything from before you. I'm not going to ask you twice. I asked you, I told you, why are you here? You should have killed him. The first thing you should have done was said sorry and run back into go over there and kill them. Instead, now you're coming up with excuses. You know what? I don't have time for this business because by the time we're done debating the subject, his hair is going to be the only thing left on that tree, and he'll be running for the hills. Vayikach shlosha shvatim bekapo. So interesting that what Yoav did is he took three shvatim, which is translated as staves. Sticks, bekapo, into his hands, v'yis ka'em b'lev Avshalom, and he thrust them, I like that word, thrust them into Avshalom's heart, odenu chai b'lev ha'elah, and there Avshalom was, still alive, dangling from this tree. So you can imagine this great man, now he has stuck into his heart these three, almost like little like arrows, sticks stuck right into his heart. So the question is, why three? So maybe that's all he was able to find. You know, he was in the middle of a war. He happened to have a few rounds left in his gun. No, so why three? So the Radak tells us that there's nothing which is coincidental. That's why Vayikare, Vayikra. It's something which is, it doesn't just happen. Things don't just happen. Says the Radak, in this pasuk, pasuk Yudal, the Amar Hazal, that our rabbis teach us that there is symbolism to the number three. He says, "Lefi sheganav shlosh levavos," because what Avshalom did was he harmed three hearts. Three times has a heart been harmed. We say it that way. What were the three times that a heart was harmed? When it came to the heart of his father, Aviv, based in Velev Anshi Yisrael, which I guess there's a lot of hearts with regard to that, but it means that a heart, which is the center of the human body, so too it means a whole group, right? It means the heart of that group. It doesn't mean physically the heart, but it means that, first of all, he harmed the heart of his father, which you can understand just on a very humanistic side, that his father was in such tremendous pain, understanding what happened to his child rebelling against his own father.
Also that he killed the other son.
He was, right. So, I mean, David was heartbroken. That's what I mean. Literally, his heart was broken. Also, the hearts of the based in, how he deceived them into coercing them to join him, as we saw previously, and the hearts of Anshei Yisrael. So the Jewish people, so we learned by Shavuos, we're all considered like Lev Echad. We're all like one heart because we all have the same mindset. So you're able to, and that's what he did. It said before in the previous chapter that he won over the hearts of the people. So Lefikach, because he caused damage three times to a heart, therefore Nosnu Bo Shlosha Shvatim. Therefore you all thought Mida Kenegan Mida, the proper quid pro quo, is that three times his heart should be injured. Lefi Shaba, fine. Let's stop in the middle of that Radak, because we need to see the next Pasuk to understand the next part of the Radak. So he was still alive, somehow, even though he had these sharp sticks penetrating into his heart. The next Pasuk tells us, Pasuk Tesvav, V'yasobu asorin arim, noisi klei Yoav, v'yaku es avsholom v'yamisuhu. So he... Yoav himself didn't get his hands dirty by murdering, I shouldn't say that, by killing him. Instead, he had 10 of his Na'arim, same, right? I guess they could relate to Avshalom, was also a Na'ar. And they were Noisei Klei Yoav. They're the ones that used to carry all of Yoav's weapons and probably all the other things that Yoav needed. His maps, provisions of some sort. V'yako es Avshalom emisuhu. So these 10 people, they all pounded upon him, and they died. So the question is, why 10? So you can maybe say it's like a firing squad. That's why you can go home at night and say, you know what?
I didn't.
It wasn't me, right? So if the king ever summons any of these 10 people, it's going to be like, nah, I didn't really hit him. It was this guy, it was that guy. So that's perhaps one reason why it wasn't just one. That's perhaps also why Yoav himself didn't want to kill him. Came pretty close to dying, presumably. But the Radak tells us further symbolism as to the number 10. And this is still the same Radak, which is underlined. Lefi Shaba al Eser Pilagshi Aviv, Lefi Koch Nosnu Bo Eser Longviot Esen Ari Yoav. So, because what did he do? He harmed his father tenfold. He harmed his father tenfold by taking his pilagshim, that he took the concubines, which he left behind. But that doesn't give him a right to take them. He shouldn't have done that. That wasn't right. Yeah, it's his father's wives, if I can use that term. It's his father's pilagshim. And it wasn't, as we said before, the Rambam explained, the significance of him taking the Pilagshim was not just taking these vulnerable women, but it was a message. Right, that I am now, I'm in charge. My dad is no longer the king, I'm the king. So therefore, he was killed by Esen Ari Yoav, by these 10 people, so as to again, to emphasize this point of 10, that he did something wrong, and therefore the way in which he is punished is with the 10. Again, that's an opportunity of tshuva, to be able to see precisely what you did wrong, which we don't have anymore, but it's a good thing, because it shows, you know what, this is my mistake. My mistake is in X, and that's why I have to improve.
I don't understand how Yoav could have killed him.
Oh, he didn't?
Yeah, because he did. He put the stakes in his heart.
Right.
Okay, and really it was a torturous death. And,
right.
And he's going totally against the word of King David, who said, for my sake, be gentle with him.
But he is responsible for the welfare of the reed. He is responsible for the welfare of the reed.
But he's going against his will.
But he's going against the...
He's going against the way. He's going against the guy who is usurping his father. So he's doing his responsibility towards the kingdom, towards Israel. A more kinder way to kill him, a quicker way to kill him, because he said at least be gentle with him.
Yes, but that was the Ritz problem.
He left him. he was, when he killed him, he would have hung to death.
No, he could have taken the sword, but he didn't. He could have been freed and run away. He could have escaped. He didn't have to die.
It was through the punishment.
But the punishment, I mean, the way he was killed was really brutal.
True. It's an unbelievable Gemara. We'll get to you in a second. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, based on the words, V'ahavta recha kamocha. What does it mean you're supposed to love your neighbors yourself, so you make them some pecan pie or something? I don't know, whatever, however you fulfill that mitzvah. So the Talmud says, V'ahavta recha kamocha, boru lo misa yafa. And I brought this up because you mentioned it. It means that when a person, based in, is about to sentence someone to death, you have to choose a misa yafa, the most humane, proper way of taking this person's life.
You mean like
skila? Like Amalek? Right. Like Amalek?
We're talking about, this is actually referring to with a basedin. And that, therefore, it's derived from this sentence. Like, for example, there are four different death penalties, and there are ones which are more severe than others. So if for some reason we're not sure, should we give you this death penalty or that one, will give you the one which is less
painful,
less severe, whatever, however it's determined. So he says, misaso mikaperis alav, that the idea, we have to understand that when a person is sentenced to death, the understanding in Jewish philosophy, even though it's not always something which we can completely understand, that misa is a kapara, that a person's being sentenced to death for having committed a treacherous crime, a murder or whatever it is, so that person, when the Beis Din sentenced that person and carries out that sentence, there is a kapara, there's an atonement which that person receives. Therefore, what you have to do is you have to pick a good death for this person. Now, that could mean, as we said, that you should pick an easy one, humane, you know, do the electric chair, maybe, you know, lethal injection, all these different things. But it also could mean realizing that it's not just about v'yarti ha'ra mikir b'acha, just get rid of this person, kill this person. The sensitivity of showing love to another Jew is that when you have to kill that Jew, I'm going to say the sentence of making sense, when you kill that Jew, you have to think, or the Beis Din, someone who knows what they're talking about, has to think, what can we do to ensure that this person's death will be a complete kapara for all the mistakes that they did in their lifetime?
According to their sins.
Of course, you know, who are we to... We can't do that. Can't be a vigilante. But we're talking about a Beis Din, or someone who is on the level of a Yoav. And therefore, to answer your question, that is precisely why what the Radak is trying to mention. There's a reason why there was 10. There's a reason why there was 3. So he could have been easily killed. Could have killed him right away. And in fact, wouldn't have had a kapara. Right. Because if you think about it, like you find all the time in these, at the end of these movies, right? A person, the bad guy is talking to the good guy, and the bad guy has a gun. He's talking to them. They have this whole long dialogue. In the midst of all this, he somehow escapes. It's like, why did you should have just shot the guy, you know? Why do you have to get into this whole dialogue? Obviously, it's for Hollywood. But it's the same thing you can say over here. That if Yoav sees that he has a chance to kill him, what is he doing? He's taking some sticks, he's hitting him so it doesn't kill him, then he gets 10 other people. In the meantime, who knows what could have happened? Maybe Avshalom's men could have come somehow from nowhere and saved him. He could have easily have killed him right away. But this is the sensitivity that Yoav had, was to even risk the possibility of not killing Avshalom in order that he should have a complete kapara.
That was his place. That was his place. His responsibility was to... Yes.
So,
he knew David would be able to do it.
So now I'm going to go a little bit crazy over here and say, and this you may not like. Perhaps when David said, Shamru me banar, that you should protect my child.
Maybe that's what he meant.
Right, who said? Now Rashi says, "Kol mi shi'avul yadu yishmerenu," protect him, save him. But it could mean save him and protect him from himself. It could be that this is the ultimate level of shmira, that he has completely been atoned for all the mistakes that he has done, which is the greatest thing that David could ever have wanted, is that his son somehow was able to
suffer in the next world.
Right. perhaps.
It is so tragic. This thing is so tragic because David could have prevented this whole thing, and he just left it with his son when it was the right time to do and talk to him and bring him close to himself. And at this point, it's all his punishment. It's his punishment.
Right. Yeah.
He has to live with it.
That's right.
That's life,
right?
None of us are perfect.
That's right. So let's just see the next couple of psukim, so we'll see what happens to the remains of Avshalom. So v'yiska Yoav b'shofar. So Yoav takes out his instrument, his shofar, and he's blowing the shofar to symbolize the victory. V'yosh, also the scare people. V'yoshav am mirdof achri Yisrael. So the people stop chasing after the one another. Ki chosach yoyev es ha'am, says the Mesudas Sion. Chosach is mana because it has been withheld. Yoav has withheld the nation from having to fight anymore. So this was exactly all they need to accomplish. It was you have.
Where is David here?
David
is in the palace.
Correctly, it's very interesting. Avshalom should have done the same thing, right? Avshalom should never have been there. So you see that I forgot the name of the book. Like All Quiet on the Western Front. The question is how you have two kings that really hate one another, and they send my 100,000 people on the battlefield. Your 100,000, but they said you should have one king like fighting another king. Let's have the two kings fight, and whoever wins, that's it. You can save millions of lives.
Yeah, they should play a game of chess.
Yeah. Right, well, that's right. That's what they did, and it saves lives. And, you know, you have to be able to accept. But this is the question. And you see that this is why David was told, don't fight, don't get into that battlefield, because if you die, we all lose. Doesn't matter how many people on their side we kill. It's a one and one. And once Avshalom was killed, that was it. It's over.
Yoav knew that he won't be able to do it against his son. He knew it.
That what?
That David could not fight against his son.
Right. He probably wouldn't have been able to fight them as effectively.
Yes, they couldn't.
Right.
The people would suffer, and they would go their own way.
Right.
Which is what happened.
That's good. I like that. So let's just conclude with this last pasuk, see what happens. V'yichu es Avshalom, v'yashlichu oso b'yar el hapachas hagadol. So they took Avshalom, so he died, they took his remains, and they put him in the forest. El pachas is translated by the Mesudas Sion as a boar, a chafira, some pit. They stuck him in a huge pit. Ve'atzivu alav gal avanim gadol ma'od. And they decided to make some type of a monument, and so that people should recognize and know that this is Avshalom's remains, this is his resting place. So they piled stones and stones on top. Which is what happens to the Ben Saramora,
we stone him. Because they didn't bury him, they just threw him into the forest. Or
right, well, into some pit.
Oh, Ya'ar.
Into the Ya'ar is a forest. El Pachas HaGadol, into some big pit, big hole. And but then they just threw rocks and stuff there. Mm-hmm. And all the people ran back to their respective homes, to their tents. And we'll conclude with the words of the Radak, which may, whatever. Let's see the Radak, which says the second line, Lo halo chaser ksib below yud, harab. It does not say it in a plural fashion. The Yeshmo Darash, Lefi Shahayu Nechlamim Min Hamar L'Sha'asu, they were concerned about the rebelliousness in which they did against the king. Lo Hischavru Yachad El Kol Echa Nasal Halo. They were so embarrassed that they made this mistake. Now that Avshalom died, they kind of realized, you know, they should never have sided with him. They should have always stayed with David. So to kind of sneak out in a very discreet and quiet way, each person went their own way in this manner back to their homes, hoping that no one really knew that I was on the battlefield to begin with. Stop here.